everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are on November 26, 2013. It's a good week. Even though it's kind of cold and damp outside, that's okay because it's holiday time. And this is a very special holiday time for those of us who choose not to eat birds, right? This is the big, unfortunate week for turkeys, and many of us who don't eat them, vegetarians, vegans, have our turkey-free events. It's kind of a hard time with family and friends when we all get together with the foods. It's such a food-focused holiday, and it's hard. It's hard for a lot of us because I think when we're giving thanks for all of our abundance, it's hypocritical, perhaps, or I'm not exactly sure the word I'm searching for, but how is it we can give thanks when we have something tortured and abused being served on our table? And it's something that I have tried to avoid for a long time now. I'm really looking forward to this Thanksgiving because we're having it at home, and we're making all the foods that we love. And you might wonder what some of those things are, and I've made it really easy for you. If you visit responsibleeatingandliving.com, where I live, you can see our Thanksgiving celebration feast video. You can watch me make all of those great recipes, and all the recipes are there on our website. And we just added a new recipe that I just got to taste yesterday and today. We're having Thanksgiving all week at home. But this is a Thanksgiving squash with polenta stuffing. We use this beautiful red curry squash. We found it a while ago when we were touring out on the east end of Long Island going to some of the organic farms. But it's a stunning red squash. And you can use another large orange pumpkin or orange squash in this recipe. But I just found this particular one to have just a very exciting shape and color. And we've stuffed it with a fabulous polenta stuffing. And it makes a great main event. You bring this out, and you can slice it, too, which is kind of fun. So check that recipe out at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And it's also Hanukkah starting on Thursday. And I don't know who plans these calendars, but, you know, sometimes the sun and the moon collide, and they do on our calendars, because the Hebrew calendar is based on the lunar cycle. And we've got Hanukkah at the same time of Thanksgiving. There's been all kinds of crazy names for the new holiday. Thanksgivica and Chanukah. I don't know. Anyway, I'm making my baked potato pancakes as an appetizer for my Thanksgiving feast this year. And what I love about them is I'm saving the oil for the lamp, and I'm not using it to fry my potato pancakes. This is an easy recipe. You can see it on our website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, the baked potato pancakes. They are really delicious. You can make them in advance, which is especially nice. Okay, and a few more things I wanted to mention. The Swing Gourmets were out swinging this weekend at the Dr. Furman Week in Health Immersion. Yes, we were out there. And if you go to swingandgourmets.com, you can see some pictures from the event. Now, the Swing Gourmets, in addition to doing a few food shows online, we have a show where we tell a story about how foods are healing and are great for weight loss. And we do it with song, and we do it with fun. And we really had a good time sharing our show with the folks at the Weekend Health Immersion for Dr. Furman. But there was something interesting that I learned talking to a lot of people at this event. A lot of people asked me, do you sell your food? Where do you sell your food? I keep telling people you have to find your kitchen. You have to find your kitchen and learn how to make food and learn what's in your food. And the only way to do that really is to get in the kitchen and put things together. And then you start to realize what goes into food. And then maybe you realize that the stuff that you're buying in packages or at restaurants isn't quite the same because they're putting other things in those dishes that maybe you shouldn't be eating. So, and it's frustrating when I hear people say, do you sell your food? On one hand, I think maybe I should be starting a manufacturing business, and I just may do that. I've been thinking about it for a long time. But I think it's so important to at least make a lot of your meals, simple meals, clean, wholesome, healthy, plant-based meals. Find your kitchen. If you can't find it, email me and maybe I can help you locate it. My email is info@realmeals.org. And the last note is I can be a bit chatty. Okay, so I'm chatty because I'm talking here for an hour every week. But I love it when I'm walking in my neighborhood and I strike up a conversation with a stranger. Now, I'm an adult. I'm allowed to talk to strangers. I don't encourage children to talk to strangers. But as an adult, there are some strangers that can turn out to be really good connections. So there's a new receptionist at our bank. And I started talking to her about making this baked potato pancake recipe. And other people in the bank started listening and everybody chimed in and it was really fun. But she ended up telling me the next time I came into the bank that she had a few friends over and she got a box grater because she didn't have a food processor to grate the potatoes. And they all had a great time grating the potatoes and the onions. And it was a big social event and they made the pancakes and it was fabulous. And that's what it's all about. Not just eating delicious, whole, nutritious food, but making it with your family and friends, finding your kitchen, and making an event of it because it's fun and it's good for us. And in the end, you feel good. That's what I want you to do. I want you to feel good in and out. Okay. I'm going to stop with that chatter now and bring on my first guest. And she's here with me in the studio, Carla Westcott. She graduated from the Parsons School of Design BFA program in 1994 and 1 year later founded Westcott, a designer evening wear company. She is adjunct faculty in the Parsons BFA program and is a member of the Council of Fashion Designers of America. And you can read more about Carla Westcott at Responsible Eating and Living, or you can go directly to CarlaWestcott.com. But we're going to be talking about her new handbag collection made exclusively of Italian textiles and hardware. The collection embodies Westcott's aesthetic of minimalist elegance. The collection is proudly manufactured in New York City's Garment District, and you can see more of them at CarlaWestcott.com. But the reason why we're talking about them is because they are cruelty-free. Welcome to It's All About Food, Carla.
Thank you, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Now, we don't eat your handbag, so your handbags aren't really food. But I think it's important to talk about because when people realize that they're eating animals and choose not to eat, then I think that opens the door to being mindful about everything that's going on, and then some people might realize, oh my goodness, my shoes, my handbags, my clothing are made from animals, and what happened to those animals before they became my accessories? And some of us make choices, like myself. I don't wear leather, I don't wear wool, I don't wear silk, my shoes are all man-made, and so are my handbags. And what we need more and more, and that's why I've got you here today and I'm grateful for you, is we need access. We need access to these things, and they need to be lovely.
That's why I started making them. You know, the only other vegetarian designer out there of note is Stella McCartney. I love her stuff.
Don't you like to put your name with Stella McCartney in the same sentence?
I do. We're best friends, let me tell you. But her things are in the thousands, as they should be. They're very beautifully made. But I couldn't find that middle price that was accessible. I just wanted a nice handbag. Not over $500, and it was impossible for me to find. There are vegan handbag makers out there, but to be blunt, I wanted something edgy and urban that looked, very chic. I live in New York. I'm a freaking fashion designer, for crying out loud, you know. But I like black, and I wanted it to be cool, so I started the company simply because I couldn't find what I wanted.
Okay, now, a lot of the, quote, vegan handbags and other accessories that we have are made, we don't know where they come from. And many of them come from China or third world countries. And yours?
New York City.
New York City!
Yeah. I've always had control over where my clothes are made. I've been making clothes for 15 years. they were made on 36th Street, and now my handbags are made on 38th Street, so that I can go to the factory. I know the people. I also know a sweatshop when I see one, and I don't use sweatshops. God bless China, but you don't know what's going on,
right.
You know, 10,000 miles away. And
well, I'm not knocking China, and I'm not supporting them. We don't know what's going on, which is
what you just said,
unless you go there. And I really believe that we can be making most of the things that we need in our own country. Every country should be making what they need. And then there might be a few exotic items because of weather or because of some particular artistic skill that developed in a specific country that you might want to import these things. But most things, most of our food, most of our clothing, most of our phones.
All of our phones.
And computers should be made in our own country.
It's, you know, it's a self-fulfilling thing. If you're manufacturing here and the jobs stay here and the money stays here, the product you're making will sell. But if we don't keep manufacturing here, everyone knows this. People don't have jobs. They don't have money to spend. And the very items you're trying to sell in your own country, people don't have the money to spend them. So really, you're helping your own business by helping your local economy.
And this is something I want everybody to think about, because the holidays, the big consumer holidays, are coming up. There's that Black Friday day, which some people tend to boycott, and then some people like to take a lot of advantage. And now it's not even just Black Friday. It's like all week, 24/7. But the point that I want to make is, if you're going out and consuming and buying gifts, I would really love it if you could think about what you're buying. Think about where it comes from. Don't just go for the least expensive, because, you know, and it's so hard. That short-term impact of getting all the gifts that you can for a great deal is so overwhelming and very powerful. But thinking ahead long-term, when you invest in a quality product that's made in the United States, even better, in your own state, your own hometown. I'm here in New York City. Yay. Think about buying less and spending your budget on quality items that are made at home.
It, you know, it's such a difficult thing, because when you buy something made in the U.S., almost all of the time, it's much more expensive.
It's much more money.
And for individuals, you know, what I teach my students at Parsons, I tell them to consider, instead of buying 10 shirts from the large stores, I guess I can name names, like, say, H&M. Mm-hmm. The shirts are $20. Take that $200 and buy one good shirt made in the United States. Buy a Philip Lim. You know, buy something local, made in New York, and take care of it. And it's less in the waste stream as well. You know, it's clogging the earth. So, you know, I know people are out shopping and they say, well, gosh, this is so expensive. Switch gears. It's better to buy chocolate bars made in Brooklyn than to buy a sweater, you know, made who knows where, by who, you don't know. It could be someone underage. They're probably making 50 cents for 8 hours of work. So switch gears. It doesn't have to be a goofy sweater. It could be, you know, food products. Most of the food products we have here are made here. So seek them out. You know, there's a lot of businesses in Brooklyn, these small businesses making these little gourmet things. Or how about a bottle of wine, you know, either from the United States or New York State?
Right.
It doesn't have to be something, the typical things we're used to. Because I know that buying USA-made products is difficult for some people.
Because they're expensive.
Heck yeah, my bags are expensive compared to things made in China.
And not all the time, but I think most of the time the quality is better. I mean, it's either, when they're made in the United States, it's either from a company that's been around and has been able to survive everything that's been going on because their product is so good, or it's a new company that's just getting started and they just want to do good. So there's only good reasons to support.
If you didn't care about quality, there would be no reason to manufacture here. You would absolutely go overseas with no quality control and get your cheap product and run with it.
Okay. So I'm sure the people in the Garment District are happy to have your business.
Yay. I hope so.
And what was their reaction when you told them what it was you wanted to make? Or did they just follow instructions?
They just follow instructions. You know, usually you get, oh, because people in the garment district are pretty blasé, you know. Uh-huh. It's whatever you want me to make, I'll make you if you pay the price. There were some challenges. This was a company, for the most part, used to working with leather. So we both sort of had to learn together how to handle these textiles, and some didn't work, and we had to start all over. Mm. But once they got it, they really got it and did a beautiful job.
Great. Now, some of these materials come from Italy?
Right now, all of our textiles are from Italy. There are a few linings that are from Korea, simply because I can't get the right color mm-hmm. from Italy. We're looking at more textiles from Spain, so it'll pretty much be Europe. But the Italian company that provides our textiles is so amazing, I can't see using anyone else.
Well, I like that. I know in Italy there have been a number of clothing manufacturers that have been sticking to very traditional methods in making Italian suits and their fabrics, and it's getting harder and harder to compete with the rest of the world. But, okay, this isn't made in the United States, but it's made in a country in a way that they're making high-quality products, and they're not necessarily mass manufacturing them or abusing their workers. They've got very highly skilled workers who are making quality products. And so I can support that too.
Yes.
And I know that there are a number of vegan shoemakers that are going to Italy, and they're probably using some similar materials for
their shoes. Company I use also has a line for shoes. So mm-hmm. This company is wonderful at providing textiles that are just stunning. A lot of people don't realize it. You know, the ubiquitous Louis Vuitton bag with the LV print.
Yes, that's Vuitton. It. We like to say Vuitton at
Vuitton.
Home because it's so much
okay.
fun to
it
say.
It is fun.
You have to stick out your lips and say Vuitton.
Okay.
Excuse me.
It's okay. I know you enjoyed that. But that's synthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't even, you know, it doesn't really click with people why the bag is $1,800. It's synthetic, and it comes from the same company that I use. They've just printed on there, and I'm glad. I'd rather it was synthetic than leather, you know. Like, otherwise, the ghosts of cows would be all over Fifth
yeah.
Avenue, you know.
But interesting what a brand can do to the price tag.
Exactly. It's all in the image.
Now, let's talk about image, because I think that's really important. And I want to give some examples before I jump into where I'm going with this. But I remember reading not too long ago about lobster, because lobster in Maine recently has dropped considerably price per pound. And there are restaurants that use the lobster and are concerned because lobster is considered a luxury item. I'm not promoting lobster here, folks. I'm a vegan. I don't get into dropping animals or sentient beings into boiling water. But this is just an example. So the restaurants are concerned. They want to keep the dishes with lobster in it at a high price, even though their price per pound wholesale has dropped considerably. And I was reading this article that said, several hundred years ago, there were servants that worked for people, and they were fed lobster every day because lobster was so cheap. Lobster was not always considered a luxury dish, and traditions and impressions change over time. So lobster went from a food for servants to a luxury item, and it's now, we'll see where it goes, depending on where the price goes. And you may remember me interviewing okay, his name escapes me at this moment, but we talked about white bread. He wrote The History of White Bread, and we learned that white bread originally was a product for the wealthy. And now, since we've come to learn more about white bread, it's so cheaply made now that it's a bread that's more affordable for the poor, and it doesn't have the same image that it used to have. So there's another product that goes from a luxury item to a not-so-luxury item. And you may have had this when you tell people you're not wearing leather shoes. They'll tell you that, you know, they must be cheap. Shoes that aren't made from leather have an impression of being cheap. And as we get really better at making these man-made textiles and synthetics, and when they're made in a quality way, not only are they superior because they're not exploiting animals by using their skins or exploiting the workers who are manufacturing them, but they actually are comfortable and breathable and wonderful and long-wearing. And I'm looking for the name. I just wanted to get... it was Aaron Bobrow-Strain who wrote White Bread, A Social History, a book that I really enjoyed. All right, so tell me about this material that... or some of the materials that you're using.
Most of them are polyester-based, and a lot of them are PVC, which sounds so much nicer than polyvinyl chloride.
Yeah.
You know? And also a lot of them are cotton. It's a coated canvas with a sort of probably a polyester coating on it. So that's pretty much where we are. I don't use cotton because of the lack of durability unless it's coated, because otherwise the bag would be, you know, in New York City, you'd have a hole in it after one day.
Yeah.
we also, I like synthetics that appear to be sort of satin and silk because I like that luxury side. Because I'm an evening wear designer, I have an impulse to make this sort of sweet luxe bag, and... So the synthetic satin silks are among my favorites.
Okay. I was, I had a thought.
We were talking about bread.
And, yeah, I was talking about bread, and I think I'm hungry. No. I'm all of a sudden I'm tongue-tied. Can you believe it?
That's
I
okay.
said I was chatty, and all of a sudden I'm just—it's not going anywhere. Okay, so let's talk about the different kinds of bags that you have. You have some that are for evening wear, and then I saw there are some that are more like for business wear. They have a like a boxy shape or a briefcase kind of shape.
Yeah, in the industry, bags are divided into soft and hard, and that's pretty much it. So the hard would be like a clutch or a stiff briefcase, things like that. And I started with soft because it was still a learning experience for me. Accidentally went to the hard things just because I chose a tough textile. And when they sewed it up, it was very stiff and beautiful. And what's ironic is that even though I've been doing evening wear for 15 years, every evening bag I've tried to make has bombed.
Oh.
You know, the sample just really... really sucked. And so most of them are day bags or tote bags. You know, I find that, I mean, who doesn't need a tote bag in New York City? So I have some that double as a handbag and tote. It's got enough compartments inside to put your wallet or valuables in. And then I have like the soft black one I showed you earlier.
Yes.
That's very roomy and happy. But now I'm going through my third round of the perfect evening clutch, so I'll let you know how that turns
Great.
Out.
Well, every blog, every story, every book you read about entrepreneurs, there are always like seven failures until you get the eighth win or numerous failures.
I think it was R.H. Macy failed like 9 times. I'm holding on to that. I'm really holding on to that. But I did my homework with the handbags. It was actually 3 years of preparation, you know, from day one when I started the research. So I feel like maybe I did enough, you know, so it's been going well.
I remembered what I wanted to talk about
okay.
before. Bing! Plastic. Now, PVC, you know, you mentioned polyvinyl chloride, and some of us will go, oh,
yeah.
It's plastic. But in order to make leather, it's a very toxic, environmentally unfriendly process. And plastics are not the most environmentally friendly, but we can use them, I think, responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read different reports weighing one versus the other, and I think leather comes up a loser.
It's not just the leather. You know, I mean, I don't have to tell you the farming of the animals, what that does to the environment. So it starts long before the animals ever slaughtered. There's an impact on the environment. The tanning of leather is horrific as far as toxins go. And it's not nice to kill animals.
It's not nice.
You know. So I am hoping that I can find more textiles that don't start with, you know, PVC or something like that. That doesn't make me happy. But I'm doing what I can do. And this goes back to the issue of quality. When we make our handbags, they're built to last. If they're taken care of, they should have a lifespan of 10 years so that you're not buying a new bag every year. You shouldn't have to. If you buy a quality product, use it until it falls to pieces. That's what I truly believe. So that you're not just throwing crap away.
Right.
That's not the way to do it.
I'm just thinking, I have a friend who told me she subscribes to this handbag of the month club,
yeah,
where she gets a handbag and then returns it and gets another one.
Great.
And those handbags have to be durable.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If people, yeah, are going to be sharing them.
I think if you get one that's good quality and if the textile is wisely chosen, you know, and I test drive all the samples. I carry them around for a few days. I'm on the subway. I'm throwing them at my husband, you know, running from my cats, whatever. And if they don't stand up to that test, it's off.
Okay. Where can we find these bags? Are they in stores?
No. I'm doing my own e-commerce at Carla Westcott. .com.
I'm looking at it here. And you're also on the PETA Mall.
I am on the PETA Mall, yeah. If you click into PETA Mall, and I'm like a business supporter, so
okay,
you'll find me in there somewhere.
Excellent. Well, if you're thinking about those holiday gifts, here's something that's cruelty-free and made in the United States. Well, if you're thinking about those holiday gifts, here's something that's cruelty-free and made in the United States and rather lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carla, for joining me.
Thank you for having me. You're welcome.
All right. So we just have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to mention something else made in the United States, because now that we're on this thing and I've got this bug about made in the United States, I've mentioned this before, but I really believe in clean water, and I distill my water, and I have used a variety of different distillers, and they're all made outside of the United States. Most of them are made in China, and even some of the best brands that we know. I'm not going to drop any names. But then I discovered one brand of water distillers made in the United States. And if you want to find out more about them, you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com. Scroll down a little bit on the right side. There's a Water Made Wonderful. It's about water distillers made in the United States, and they're my favorite water distiller product. So if you're looking for one for the holidays, this is the one I recommend. Okay, clean water, cool bags. When we come back, we're going to be talking about naturally sweet and gluten-free vegan desserts. That sounds pretty good. Let's take a break.